if you want to understand your place in the world and anything that you interact with, whether it is the ball that you're kicking on the field or the phone that you're using to chat with your friends, you have to understand physics, because otherwise you're just going to live in a sad black hole. And it's nice to know how things work and how things came from. That way you can interact with the world, and when things break, you can fix them.
Welcome to List Envy, the best bang in podcasting since the big one. I'm Listmeister General Mark Stedman, and every week I bring on a guest, and together we collaborate to build a top five list on a topic they choose. We do it draft style, putting our best picks first and then working our way down until we have enough to create a definitive top five list. My guest this week is author and teacher Catherine Benfante, and today we are building our top five list of physicists who influence our daily lives. Now, Catherine is the author of the book Scattered, which tells the story of Ellie Rutherford, daughter of renowned physicist Ernest Rutherford, who becomes an accidental time traveler.
I knew about this physicist from my undergrad years, because I went to McGill in Montreal, where this guy was the head of physics, and I knew that he had been there. And so I just thought, oh, what if there was, you know, a lab mishap and his daughter time traveled accidentally? And I didn't even know if he had a daughter. It turns out he did, so it was a good idea. But it came from what if. And once I had the idea, the plot just sort of fell into my head and I couldn't not write it. Yeah, I just thought it was a really cool idea. And I knew enough about this physicist in the book. Ernest Rutherford is the guy, and his daughter is the main character. So I knew enough about him to know that there was something to talk about. And the more research I did, I just thought, oh, this is really cool. I got to keep going. And I just liked it.
Let's get into this. Let's do this. I'm excited to see where we go here, because I think it's going to be really interesting. We are perhaps doing this in a slightly different order because, you know, I think we, for one thing, we know that one physicist's work builds on another, you know, in so many sciences. So who is the first of your picks?
So I'm going to go with the classic of classics, Isaac Newton. And he was late 1600s, early 1700s, and he established what we now call classical or Newtonian mechanics. And so he described three laws of motion, and he came up with this equation, F equals MA. I don't know if people know it, if you're not an engineer physicist. I think you should. It's not like E equals MC squared. But you deal with classical mechanics every day because it governs how we interact, how we move on the earth, and how we expect objects to behave. So without actually knowing it, we deal with classical mechanics. And these three laws were like the force. When you touch something, it's the force is equal to mass times acceleration. Okay. You might not think of it that way, but that's what's happening. The theory of momentum, that something in motion stays in motion, or if it's at rest, it stays at rest unless an external force acts on it. So you expect things to stay there, or you expect things to keep moving, right, at a steady speed. And then the last one is there are equal and opposite forces when objects interact, like billiard balls. So our understanding of this, and some of it's intuitive, you know, but Isaac Newton set down these laws, and it literally rules how we see life. And I think that's really cool. It's so basic, but he said it out loud. So that was the one thing. But he also came up with the law of universal gravitation, which is, you know, very massive objects who are separated by distance exert a gravitational force to each other. And so, you know, I would say it's been around for a couple hundred years, so we understand it. But coming up with an equation is pretty big in, you know, late 1600s.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Yeah. I mean, the undisputed, you know, the the goat, the goat of physics.
Right. Great wig and all, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, amazing. Yes. I should have gone as far back as that. I did not. Okay. wonderful. So I'm going to start with Joseph Swan.
Wow. who is he?
So he is apparently, I didn't know. So, you know, so as the listener will probably know, and as Catherine, you will begin to understand, you know, the beauty of me doing this show is I get to come in as a complete knife, and just sort of derp around and baby's day out my way into a list.
Awesome.
By, you know, sort of stumbling upon bits of things that I find out and accruing bits of knowledge that I can then spout in pubs and sound like it, you know, actually like means something. So I was looking at Edison and, cause I was thinking about physics in terms of the things that we practically use. I was coming at this from the very practical end, not necessarily the theoretical end.
Okay.
Of like, you know, if we didn't have an understanding of these things, these objects, these things that we use wouldn't be available to us. So started off with Edison and the light bulb, and then discovered, because the internet will tell you, that there is a dispute as to whether we want to credit Edison with the light bulb or Joseph Swan, because there is an argument to be made that Swan came up with it first, but and he was a lad from Sunderland in the UK, started working on his light bulb in 1850. He had a working device by 1860. And then both he and Edison happened to patent their respective inventions in the same year in 1880. And so there was this dispute and they settled it by setting up their own company, the Ediswan Company.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so there is sort of argument to say that perhaps he's slightly preceded, but I think, you know, we could go with either one. But just because I thought I would save the internet's well actually muscle, I thought I would go with Joseph Swan.
Wow. That's cool. I mean, I miss incandescent bulbs so much, so I love that pick. Wow. And I actually live very close to Edison, New Jersey, where he had his, you know, labs and whatnot. So yeah. That's cool.
So there you go. Okay, who is number two for you?
All right, so my number two is Scottish guy, James Clerk Maxwell. He was in the mid-1800s. And so if you're in physics, you understand this. I was an engineer, and so we didn't get into physics so much, but I knew who this guy was because he published a theory of electromagnetism, which showed that electricity, magnetism, and light are all just manifestations of the same phenomenon. They're the electromagnetic field, electromagnetic waves. It's all related. And prior to that, like, people didn't really put that together. And it's a huge deal. And he did this even without knowing the structure of the atom. Like, the electron wasn't discovered yet. The nucleus, the proton, the neutron. So none of that. This was just all, you know, empirical evidence, experimental evidence, and some theory. And he produced these four equations, which I'm not going to go over. But they're just so fundamental. The Maxwell equations are such a big deal. And they let us, without putting this together, we couldn't have had later advancements nearly as fast. So this lets us have an electric generator. You know, when you're charging, you're putting a current through a wire by having a changing magnetic field. When you have rotating magnetic fields, you're creating electric fields. So this was just so, it just has a real practical application for us. And he also let us calculate the speed of light, which is, you know, kind of a big deal. And this was 1865. So I think it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Back into the 19th century is where all the fun was happening.
This is smart guys. Like, you talk about genius. Some of these guys, I think, were just heads and tails above us peons.
Absolutely. Yeah. The amount of, I really, as I was digging into this stuff, I really got a sense of, if you were in that community at the time, how exciting it must have been, how just thrilling it must have been to be part of that, to be experimenting with these things you don't really know yet. And you've just read a paper that, oh my God, this thing's been published and it turns out waves work in this way or whatever. Like, I can feel how exciting that must have been at the time.
Yeah, that's why they call it the golden age of physics, which I'm not sure when it starts, but I want to say 1890, maybe, until about 1930. Mm-hmm. Just like this incredible, massive advancement. And I think it's because of like guys like Maxwell who just said, okay, well, this is the equation. This is how it all relates. So boom, there you go.
And I mean, I don't know how things worked then, but like really such an age, it felt like, of information being, I mean, if you had the means to access it, like it didn't feel like information was being kept from you, if you know what I mean. It, you know, if you subscribe, I guess if you subscribe to the journals, then, you know, you could read it, or if you were curious enough. Whereas now it feels like things are a lot more secret, you know. It's like the open source kind of equivalent of the time, which just feels wonderful and exciting.
I didn't think about that. I mean, they had conferences back then too, where they would all get together, and you got these like photos, really old photos of 30 amazing physicists all together. That's what you did. It's like how much wattage brain power is in that room right then.
As much as I enjoyed, and I did, Halt and Catch Fire, the TV series, I would love, have you ever seen that?
No, never heard of it actually. Is that a UK thing?
It was on AMC in the States. I think it was an AMC show. And it is the story. It's like they've sort of tracked a company or a group of people parallel to Apple and that home computer revolution from the late 70s through to, I think they take it through to the early to mid 90s. And it's over four or five seasons. And it's about basically the birth of the personal computer. It's a fictional company, but it's tracking alongside companies like Apple and Microsoft, and then later Yahoo and stuff like that. And it's wonderful. It's a really great series. Highly recommend it. I would watch happily a Netflix or a whatever series about, as you say, the golden age of physics and all the characters around it. I think it would be wonderful. We should commission it.
Yeah, really. I mean, it's not just for nerds, no. I think, because there's so many big characters and so much, I don't want to say drama, because I kind of hate that word, but all of the interesting so trials. Oh, God, right? But it's just one thing after another. And just, I think their labs, if you look at pictures, they were very messy. Now, wires everywhere and just experiments filling over and being cannibalized for new experiments. Such was the advancement. And that fervor would be pretty cool to see.
I watched, I only saw it in parts while I was doing my research, but YouTube unearthed this, I'm going to assume a BBC documentary, probably from the 70s or early 80s or something. And it was talking about one of the people that I'm going to mention soon. And it was two very large metal, almost cabinet looking things and electromagnetic sparks going between them. And then one of the, like, not exactly lab assistant, he was a higher position there, but one of the assistants walking in between them. And I'm just thinking, what are you doing, man? Like, you don't know. You don't know what's going to happen.
God, yeah.
The bravery or the, I don't know, something.
Lack of lab safety. That's why Marie Curie died.
Oh, man.
You know, like, absolutely. Yeah. No, I mean, these guys would take radioactive substances like these lumps of radium and they'd put it in their pockets and take it home with them so to keep it safe and bring it home, put it on their dresser, and then bring it back to the lab the next day. That's insane.
Can anyone smell roasting? Oh, that's my testicles.
Yeah. Why are my hands red and raw? I don't know.
Oh. Right. Speaking of characters, I'll give you my number two, which is William Shockley. Red flag, he's a eugenicist. We'll put that aside for now. But part of the solid state working physics group, or a solid state working physics group, a solid state physics working group in America, that was formed after the war, and looking into an alternative to vacuum tube amplifiers. As I was discovering, these are things that increase the power of an electrical signal. And that's obviously now we have, I won't spoil it. His name was left off a patent that his team was working working on. So I guess in a fit of pique, he then went on to build his own transistor, which is something that can amplify signal but also act as a switch. And so going from the light over to the next bit of the circuit, the transistor, I thought I would go with William Shockley.
It's a good pick. Yeah, very, very high high impact. Yeah.
Okay. I feel all right about that.
It's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm flying blind here, Catherine.
No, that's good. You know, as I was making my list, I was thinking, you know, there are some people that affected things that we use every day, but I didn't go in such the practical side that you did. Now I feel a bit daft, as you guys might say. I should have gone the other way, but
a couple of weeks ago, actually it was a while back now, I did an episode on ways that we can positively change the world, and I went like super navel gazy, and my person, you know, but the guest was like, no, you do these specific things. It was like, okay, good. So, you know, yeah, it's nice to have a balance. That's what we need.
Someone's got it. Yeah.
Who's your number three?
So I went with Ernest Rutherford here. So I'm totally obsessed with this guy.
Excellent.
My husband will say that, you know, I don't play whatever the game is, 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon. I play 6 degrees to Ernest Rutherford, because everything I feel like that we talk about, and we have pretty like sciencey conversations at home sometimes, everything comes back to this guy. He was, he worked at the turn of the last century. So like 1890s, 1900s, early 1900s. And he had such an effect, not just on the things that he worked on, but the people that he worked with, that he inspired people to run their labs like he did. And he was an experimental physicist. He had no time for theoreticians, basically. And his mantra was like, let's see some results, literally see some results. And he actually ran the Cambridge physics lab when J.R. Oppenheimer went there. And Oppenheimer was famously a theoretician and very clumsy in the lab, and Rutherford didn't want him there. He was going to turn him down, and then the university president overruled him. And so Oppenheimer went and studied there, and it ended up kind of being a disaster, if you've read anything about Oppenheimer. But Rutherford was completely opposite. So not only the way that he just inspired people, he had tons of researchers who went on to get Nobels, including himself, but his main thing that he did was he came up with the model of the atom. That's basically what we use today. Like there have been modifications to the electron cloud and the energy states that are around there. But he discovered that there's a nucleus of an atom, which was thought of as like a chocolate chip cookie before then, or a raisin bun. But he came up with a model of a very, very small, positively charged nucleus in the center. And the rest was just empty space. And the idea, like, it was very hard for people to accept that an atom was mostly empty space. But so he did this, and this was just so revolutionary. And obviously this helped other physicists after him develop things like quanta, which is light radiating in little packets instead of light or energy, however you want to say it, in packets instead of continuously. And so all kinds of things. And he discovered a radioactive half-life, which is, and he estimated the age of the Earth, a little inaccurately, but he basically created radiometric dating, which is amazing. He worked with radiation and discovered and named like alpha radiation and beta radiation. And at the time, a bunch of physicists were trying to discover what they call like a radioactive series, how things like degrade into other elements, which is pretty cool to think that that actually happens. And, you know, this is why people test for radon in their house.
Yeah.
Right.
So when was this happening? Sorry.
So it's okay. It's like 1911 is when he published this. Yeah, absolutely. But his researchers split the atom, did the first controlled nuclear reaction. He contributed to radar and sonar technology during the war. Just like incredible stuff. So I love this guy. There's so much to learn about him.
Yeah.
Sorry, nerded out there.
Wonderful. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Thank you. As soon as this name came up for me, I was like, oh yeah, now that's a name I use every day. I come up against at least an abbreviation of this person's name every day. So I'm going with Heinrich Hertz.
Oh yes.
The German physicist who noticed sparks forming between wires, which I guess he determined to be electromagnetic waves, and constructed a transmitter and a receiver. I think he was the gentleman that was depicted in the documentary that I remember, who just made these massive things and got someone to just stand in between these sparks.
Cool.
The sparks jump from the transmitter from the transmitter and then radiate outwards and are then picked up by a receiver. And so we now use Hertz, just the H and the Z, to measure cycles per second. I use it every day because the way audio recording works, or digital audio recording anyway, is that a sample of frequency is being, or a sample of I guess vibration. You'll know what is being sampled, but every, you know, so many thousand. Well, it's usually 44,100 times a second, or 44.1 megahertz. And so without it, I wouldn't be able to do some of my further picks. But it is a name that I literally see every day as I do my work.
Yeah. Talk about impact.
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
Yes.
Wow. I feel really silly not including him. That's awesome.
Oh, nice. Oh, yeah. It's, I mean, yeah, it's like some of these names were coming up, and then as I was sort of working on things, it was really fun to actually look back, and you start to see the work that was being built on someone else's work and directly referencing that understanding. And it's really fun to actually just dig into that. I had a lot of fun researching this one. It's great.
Yeah, cool.
Who is your number four, please?
So I don't think you can have a physicist list without him. It's Einstein.
Of course. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And so...
Sorry, which Einstein? Sorry, I had to do that. Wait, right? which Einstein is that?
You know what's funny is you ask anyone around the world to sketch Albert Einstein,
yeah,
they can do it.
Yeah.
Who can you actually draw? Who could you pick out of a mugshot crowd?
It's Einstein. It's incredible, actually.
Everyone knows him.
Mm.
So, but that's not really why I picked him.
No.
Okay, the single thing, the reason is... his most influential action, he wrote to President Franklin Roosevelt in 1939, along with another physicist, Leo Szilard, and he alerted FDR to the danger that Hitler might build an atomic weapon and use it. And he said that the U.S. should start their own serious atomic weapons research. And before then, it was just like, yeah, maybe it's a possibility. But that letter... a warm letter and meeting with FDR was the key stimulus for the U.S. to begin the Manhattan Project. Oof. And without it, it's very widely believed that we would not have been serious. We would not have gotten started fast enough. And so obviously we got the bomb first and we used it. And so now we're in the atomic age. And Einstein just changed the face of the war, changed the face of the world. I think it's just... probably the single hugest action that, you know, the power of the pen, you know.
Yeah, just the power of an idea, the power of, hey, just the tap on the shoulder of, hey, you should probably look over here because there's a bunch of stuff that you should know about.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, he did other things. Right?
He did other stuff, yeah.
He kind of started the quantum theory, quantum mechanics, and he provided visual proof that atoms exist, theorized relativity. Yeah, all huge.
Yeah,
and as like a science...
fundamental understanding of time and space and how they intermingle, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, and I love science fiction, and I love time travel and alternate realities, so I find all of this fascinating. Like, I'm glad that he did his work and that we understand time dilation and such. You know, he predicted black holes existence and redshift, gravitational waves, and all this stuff. So yeah, kind of a big impact on everything.
Yeah, kind of a big stinking deal.
Science fiction. Yeah, I love that. So
excellent. Side note: have you seen the Apple TV series Dark Matter?
Oh my god, no! But I loved the book because I don't have Apple TV. But I love Blake Crouch.
Yeah, I'm thinking I'm going to have to read the book. I think I would enjoy it because it's...
Oh, good.
I would say the TV series is very good. So I don't know how it compares to the book, but it is... It's good. I really like the concept. And I mean, I'd be fascinated to learn how... Because in the TV show, they had the challenge of... how you depict a human being in a quantum state, effectively, and the ability to move between these different dimensions or these different realities. It would be interesting to see how that's read in the book, and I don't want you to tell me because I will find out myself. But yeah, you know, they obviously that's a challenge. Once I sort of got what was going on, and sort of, you know, by episode two, I'm like, okay, I'm invested now. It's yeah, really, really enjoyable. So if you do end up getting Apple TV, it's one to recommend. I think it's a good series.
Oh, that's on my list, honestly. And yeah, if you're going to read Dark Matter, also read Recursion. It's kind of the same theme. Super good.
Ooh, okay. That's a word that I like. The sound off. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Oh, lovely. Right. So my number four, then, crikey, we are rattling along. My number four is Guglielmo Marconi.
Love it.
The electrical engineer from Italy who invented radio wave-based wireless telegraph technology. Tapping on a Morse key caused a spark to jump between two live wires, and that causes radiation, which then a receiver picks up. So this was tested over different distances with, I think it was Marconi's brother having to fire a shotgun when the message was received, and that's how they found out that it worked. Apparently the Italians weren't that fussed. They weren't really interested. But then the British Navy he wrote to the British Navy and said, you know, you could use this. And then in 1909, so we are still in that golden age period, in 1909 he got the Nobel Prize in physics. And given my job and what I do and my interests, it would be difficult for me not to bring Marconi into the picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And can I add a side note to that?
Please.
So at the same time that Marconi did his testing, Ernest Rutherford did the same thing.
Huh.
And so they developed it at the same time, but Marconi beat him on distance. Marconi was like 10 meters, I think, and Rutherford only managed half a meter. And when he found out that Marconi had done better, he's like, well, forget it. I'll just keep working on radioactivity.
Wow.
And he didn't want to mess with patents and all that.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Oh, incredible. I would subsequently learn, this was a few years ago, that... Marconi also had his own TV transmissions, or there was a Marconi standard, which was, I think, if I have it right, was competing with John Logie Baird's standard for how they filmed TV. There was a really nice dramatization or sort of a drama piece about the first ever BBC transmission. It's called The Fools on the Hill, I think, because that was the nickname for them. They were known as The Fools on the Hill because they were messing around with all this silly television stuff. And I think there was a discussion about how the Logie Baird system was superior to Marconi's system. And so, you know, there was obviously
Wow. <Nerdery. laughs> No, that's cool. I mean, talk about using your technology and trying to find all the ways to use it, right?
Yeah,
that's very smart.
Yeah, I love it. Fantastic. Okay, we are at your number five. Who is your number five?
Yeah, Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
So pretty cool guy. Outspoken, bold, never quit kind of guy. The reason I put him on this list is because of his 1988 book, A Brief History of Time. And the reason why is, I had to check the stats on this. So this is a non-technical book talking about the nature and the structure and the fate of our universe. So it's approachable for everyone, right? It sold 25 million copies and it topped the Sunday Times list for 237 weeks.
Goodness me.
Yeah, so kind of a big deal. And he made physics approachable and understandable for the everyday person. And okay, so a lot of those 25 million people were probably nerds that already knew about cosmology, right? but it's a mainstream book that anyone could read and like. So to me, that was like Gutenberg's Bible 500 years later and for science. Like, it brought understanding to people. And yeah, and not to mention like his TV show appearances. Like, he was a recurring guest star on The Big Bang Theory. He was, which was hilarious. He was very
Simpsons,
good at that.
Monty Python.
Futurama.
Yeah.
He did. And that made people realize, like, okay, I can understand physics. And they were curious about it. And I think that that is, you know, just such a good impact. Not only that, and his big work was on gravitation and singularities. And he, you know, worked with black holes. And he predicted radiation coming from black holes. It's called Hawking radiation. And really advanced that. He made this great unified theory of relativity and quantum mechanics, which previously had eluded people. Einstein was, you know, working on this, didn't get there. But Hawking did. So just smart guy.
Absolutely wonderful.
I liked him. Oh, and one thing, you'll appreciate this because you watch Dark Matters. He was so much a vigorous supporter of the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. Mm. And that every little thing that we do has multiple, like an infinite number of options, because of on the quantum level, it could fall either way, like kind of the Schrodinger's question. And the universe that we live in the moment that we're in is just that wave function collapsing to our point in time that we live in. And so I just love that he pushes for this because it affects science fiction. And this was something that Einstein couldn't accept. He couldn't live with. He fought against it because he said, God does not play dice. That's where that famous comment comes in. So I like Stephen Hawking's push for this personally.
Yeah. I've seen two good Hawking films that have, I found really interesting. One was obviously the theory of everything from a couple years ago, but a few years before that, there was a sort of a quiet again, I think it was a little BBC effort. I can't remember who played Hawking, but it was much more focused on his early life and those first sort of things that he was messing around with. Was it Cambridge, wasn't it? I think. Cambridge,
right? Yeah, he was the math professor there. Sorry, go
there
on.
You go, thank you. Yeah, real-time follow-up. And I to have had his sense of humor, to be able to be as playful as he was, not just with the living situation that he had, but also playful within his subject matter, I think, you know, to be able to raise an eyebrow and to not take things too, you know, as seriously as I don't know. Yeah. Just the whole idea of making this in some way approachable, because then if that means you can inspire, someone at a younger age who might never get into that topic, but because something that was made a little bit more accessible, like that's a, you know, a wonderful gift for the world to be able to explain something in understandable terms.
Absolutely. I don't think just anyone could accept their diagnosis and keep moving. And I understand he was depressed for a while, understandably, who wouldn't, but he moved from it. Yeah, that takes a special person.
Yeah,
definitely. Maybe his genius helped with it.
Yeah.
You know, just knowing that you have this gift, and if you're really smart, you can't stop and wallow. You have to keep pushing.
Yeah, if you've got something that's animating you in that sense of like, I've got something to prove, like literally I've got something to prove, you know, I believe something and I have a theory and it's got to be borne out. I've got to answer this question. I cannot sit by and let other situations stop me from being able to answer this question, because otherwise I'll go mad. Like I can understand that impetus.
Yeah, driven, right?
Oh, wonderful. Okay. My last one then, I'm going to go with, because of, you know, very much in sort of in keeping with where I've gone, I'm going to go with Alexander Graham Bell. This is another one that I thought there is some controversy here, but I wasn't able to satisfactorily unpack it about, you know, there's so many of these things, like who actually invented it versus who got their name on the patent, but hey-ho.
Yeah.
He's you know, you listening, you know, but he's the phone guy. Building on Marconi's work, Mester originally was doing this with a needle dipped in acid. So you would have a diaphragm that would vibrate as sound radiation came out, and there was a needle that would dip into some acid that would then do something that I don't understand.
physics, I don't know.
something. And then that was later replaced with an iron cylinder and then the ability to translate those signals into information that could be sent wirelessly. Incredible. I had a lovely phrase earlier today about information. It used to be that information could only travel as fast as on horseback, for so many years. And then suddenly, we have information that can pass in seconds.
Yeah. Imagine hearing some of those first phone calls and just not being able to believe that the person that you're hearing is far away, but right at your ear.
Yeah. Incredible. I mean, there's phone conversations I've heard where I'm like, I don't think you've got that. You actually don't need to shout to cover the distance of the phone call. Like, the phone will do that for you.
Right. It's like talking to my mother sometimes. I love her, but yeah.
So, Catherine Benfante, eh? What a fabulous guest. Sometimes you come away with these from these conversations just going, that was just a lovely hour spent in charming company. And it was one of those. Very nice. Always nice to meet a fellow author. Sort of on that note, sort of tangentially, I'm going to be taking a bit of a break from List Envy for a bit. But stay connected, because there will be things are coming. We've got more episodes in the way, but I need to take a little bit of a break from a few things. But one of the things I will be doing is plotting the next. So I wrote a kid's book back in 2019, which was weirdly enough around the same time that List Envy was just beginning. I was also actually finishing up my kid's book, which is called Molly Whiskers and the Blue Tentacle. Weirdly enough, I don't know if I've ever actually talked about it on the podcast. Maybe I have, but I'm not sure. Anyway, if you should like to listen, I wrote it as a book, and then I had a wonderful voice actor called Imogen Church do the voices. And it's great. Like, it's great. I'm not going to say it's perfect, it's the best thing in the world, but it's great. She just elevates it. I'm happy with the writing as well. Anyway, listen, it was just to say, if you want to check that out, you can search for Molly Whiskers. But I'm going to be scoping out the next book because it's been a long time. I put it in a drawer for a bit, and then I sort of took it out of the drawer, and it properly kind of got finished at the end of 2020. That was a weird way of saying that collection of numbers. But yes, so I'm about right to start Molly Whiskers and the Song of the Unicorn. That's partly what I'm going to be doing on my little pod sabbatical. But I will find ways to keep you company in the meantime. So two things you can do. Check out Molly Whiskers because it's fun for the whole family, and especially if you like nerdery, and there's lots of science in it, science with an exclamation mark in it, which means it's not real science, but it's science, you get it. So you can do that, and you can also go to thebigminute.com. That's thebigminute.com. That is where every week I write about a single minute in podcast audio and tell you why I think it's good. So whether you are interested in the medium or you're just looking for some new recommendations, some new shows to check out, then that is a good way of discovering them, because I'll tell you why I think they're good. So there you go. There's a little bit of homework for you. But now we shall return to our top five list of physicists who impact our daily lives with Catherine Benfante. I am kind of gobsmacked that we haven't overlapped. I thought there would be quite a lot of overlap here. So I'm loving this.
Me too. I really thought that my list would be kind of the same as yours, mostly.
I think we've got a lovely dovetailing here. And I've taken a stab at a top five here. So I'm going to read this to you and let me know what you think. So from five to one, And I've moved a couple of things around, and we can discuss why. So from 5 to 1, I've gone Stephen Hawking, Heinrich Hertz, William Shockley, Ernest Rutherford, and Isaac Newton.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I wanted to, because like Newton's fundamental, like foundational. You made such an amazing case for how many things Rutherford has given us that I was like, okay, he's got to be bumped up the list, I think.
I'm such a nerd about it, yeah.
That's exactly why I love doing this show. It's why, you know, it really does fill me with glee.
Oh, cool.
And then with the Hawking, I was like, I'd originally put Einstein there, but mm-hmm. the fact that the way that he opened science up, that was the thing that made me think, actually, because there is we can all have even a pop science understanding of things thanks to that book, I think. That is a wonderful gift to the world. And so that's why I listed him above Einstein.
Okay. That's cool. I personally feel he is very influential there. I'm surprised that Einstein didn't make your top five, because just of the atomic influence, like the war would have been very different without that letter.
Yeah.
And, you know, even I didn't really realize it, but I was having this conversation with my husband, and we had watched the Oppenheimer film a couple months ago, and you kind of see that impact, and it's like, oh wow, so that one small thing really changed the face of our existence. Like, we could be, I don't know, I feel like the Allies would have won the war anyways, it just would have been longer, but
yeah. Oh, okay, all right.
We have 5.5.
can't break the format.
Can't be, yeah.
Okay. I'm going to make an argument that we can lose Shockley because so much of what we've discussed here is really about, it's a lot more about particle movement and wave movement, which is more fundamental than the, you know, yes, we know how foundational the electric light is in the transistor.
It is, really is. I mean, in the age that we live in today, I gotta say, I would be, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, I would be willing to replace Rutherford with Einstein just because of the atomic age. I mean, I'll always have a place in my heart.
I'm gonna have a place in my heart for Rutherford at this point.
Cool, dude.
Okay. All right. I will. Okay. Yeah. Let's do it. Okay. So from 5 to 1, then our list looks like this: Stephen Hawking, Heinrich Hertz, William Shockley, Albert Einstein, Isaac Newton. Catherine Benfante, do you consent to this list?
With a slightly broken heart, I do. but I agree. I agree.
With the honourable list of honourable mentions.
Yes.
Rutherford is right there at number 6, just left of the podium.
Yes, absolutely.
Speaking of honourable mentions, is there anyone that didn't make your top 5?
So 2, actually. I was going to put on Oppenheimer because of his work on the Manhattan Project. I just think that his leadership made it happen on time.
Yeah.
And then I was going to put on Niels Bohr.
Yeah, I had him on my list.
He's a very good guy, and he was the one who put electrons in energy levels around the nucleus, and so that helped us understand quantum theory better. And he was a real push for quantum quantum mechanics, along with like Schrodinger's version of it, and then what Hawking was a supporter of later, which is like the quantum superposition idea and just like the wave interpretation of it. So yeah, he argued with Einstein for like the last half of his life, both of their lives. And they were, you know, good pals professionally, but Bohr won in terms of the ideas there. What about you?
I had Richard Feynman.
Oh, yes.
Really interesting, fun speaker to watch, actually. I was watching a little bit of him talking about tiny machines. A really interesting speaker. And I'm probably misinterpreting this or getting this wrong, but there's essentially the idea that all the information in the world could be effectively written on a speck of dust. It was all a question of, could you get the atoms spaced enough? It gets really interesting, and I like it. And so his whole thing is machines being able to build ever smaller machines until, you know, finally we have nanotech, which, you know, we do have.
You would probably like his memoirs. Have you read them? They're very small, approachable, so good.
Is it Surely You Must Be Joking? Is that the
yes
one? Yeah, I've had them recommended to me. Yeah. We used to do a show about The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and I think that was our first Audible recommendation.
I believe it.
Yeah. And then my last one, it's not strictly, he's a scientist, but not a physicist. He was a computer scientist. And I just thought, I've got to throw one in for Tim Berners-Lee. Mm. He was working at CERN at the time when he developed the World Wide Web. And, you know, it's the World Wide Web. So Tim Berners-Lee. But he was never going to make my top five.
Yeah, because he wasn't a physicist. Yeah, but Big impact.
Yeah. But
kind of what we're using to make the list and all sorts. Yeah. So, no, which is ironic.
I'm going to honor the, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I'm going to honor the list. So there you go. Wonderful. Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. Please tell us where we can read your work, keep up with what you're doing, because tell us about Scattered and you know, why. I don't know. I think you've already made such a great case.
Well, let's see. It's about Ernest Rutherford.
Tell us about your work, please.
Sure. Thanks, Mark. So it's a science fiction time travel novel, and it takes the life of the daughter of Ernest Rutherford. It's a pretty cool physics guy living in Montreal in 1906. And it's kind of historical fiction. But I kind of make her time travel to 2006, and this takes place in McGill University in Montreal, where Rutherford was the chair of physics. And then, so she's in 2006, and she's got to, you know, build a time machine back, essentially, to get back home. And then she discovers, oh, do I want to? And so there's like a lot of juxtaposition of the past life and the future life, well, which is our contemporary life. And then there's some, you know, discussion about what we want in life. Kind of, but it's more like, it's like a cozy sci-fi. Like if you've ever read Mike Chen, it's kind of like that. So I did a lot of research for this, and so I like to write science in science fiction, but still make it readable.
Yes, absolutely. How much do you enjoy the research process?
I do. I like to learn new things, and I like to understand what I'm doing, and I want to make sure that if someone reads what I'm writing and they have enough knowledge of the subject to be dangerous, that I'm not messing up, because yes, I would be really embarrassed. And I'm sure that I did make some errors, and I apologize about it. But I think if you're going to write anything, even if you're not writing historical fiction, you have to do research. And that's part of the fun. You know, otherwise, just go write poetry. No offense to poets.
The disdain.
No, I do like some poetry, but not yeah. much.
Yeah,
I'll be honest.
I'm with you. So, where can we find your work and keep up with you?
Thank you. I have a website. It's CatherineBenfante.com. I know that's kind of hard to spell. It's BenFante, and Catherine spelled the traditional way with a K. And my book's on Amazon, and some other ones that I have some short stories in. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook too, old school.
Keeping it old school.
Yep, at Katie Benfante.
Links are in the show notes, so go and check those out. Catherine, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for being on List Envy.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is a cool discussion. I learned a lot.